So, meine Damen und Herren, herzlich willkommen zum Nachmittagsteil dieser Schwarzmeer-Konferenz hier in Graz. Es geht jetzt am Nachmittag um universitäre Zusammenarbeit. Wir haben schon am Vormittag Interessantes über Universitätsprojekte gehört. Jetzt geht's sozusagen in die Tiefe. Und als ersten Referenten darf ich Thomas Krüssmann zum Podium bitten, beziehungsweise vom Podium hierher zu mir bitten. Er ist Direktor einer Forschungsplattform. Sie haben davon schon gelesen, wenn Sie Ihre Unterlagen genau anschauen. Da steht vorne drauf REEES. Ich erkläre es Ihnen nicht, aber er sagt Ihnen, was genau diese Plattform ist. Und er wird referieren über Universitätskooperationen als Katalysator für wirtschaftliche Entwicklung. Herr Krüssmann, darf ich Sie bitten?
Thank you very much, dear ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests. I have to apologize in advance. After my presentation, I have to run back home. I was expecting to be in the first half of the day, but nevertheless, I'm very happy to be here. I'd just like to share a few impressions with you, fairly frankly, from the work we did so far. Of course, I also want to explain who we, this mentioned center, who we are, what we do. First of all, I want to underline what Professor Mangot this morning said, what really resonated with me. Black Sea as a region, for me, I mean, being a German and Austrian, I admit it, it sounds a little bit like a euphemism, because if you say Southern Caucasus, people think of, oh yes, we have those negative comments or these negative associations. Black Sea sounds a little bit like Danube, sounds almost like home, so we're all a lot more comfortable with the Black Sea metaphor, even though we all know that Azerbaijan is not on the Black Sea, it's rather on the Caspian Sea. But of course we need metaphors, and we also want to sell this topic to an audience, so we want to, of course, emphasize our own importance in saying, yes, this is an important region. Of course, also want to work with partners successfully. We've discussed this morning, you all know, we have very different vectors of development. We have an intrinsic competition here between the regional powers, Russia and Turkey, and the EU that's somehow struggling to find its place. That was all said. We also have something, it's in German always called Integrationskonkurrenz, sort of the competition between integrating forces. I'm saying all this because it has an effect on the kind of academic work we do, and as academics, we are, of course, sort of, let's say, as dynamic academics, we always try to guess what the future will be, and we have to make proposals on issues that are coming up. So, I mean, of course, from a legal faculty, which I represent, the legal faculty of the University of Graz, you expect that we do lots of, you know, comparative research and this and that, but most of it is actually driven by a social science agenda, anticipating issues. And so the kinds of conflicts that have been the topic of this morning's talk are also very important when we think about what are future challenges, how do we transpose them into research schemes. We're not historians, we don't research the past, and we're not magicians to know the future, but we basically have to look at what the situation in the present time is and think of the near future, let's say. This kind of 2020 thing is a very good way of doing some thinking now, because it fires the imagination. Integrationskonkurrenz is a topic for me because we are, as a law faculty, as a university, we're of course deeply involved with European law, with European integration. So the Russian project of creating or transforming the customs union into a Eurasian union is intellectually very fascinating, and we see that on the ground it has a very mixed reception. My understanding, but I may be wrong, is that Armenia is actually quite sympathetic to it. A couple of republics in Central Asia are also receptive to it. So maybe at some point in time, simply as, let's say, as academics, we come to a point where we say, well, you know what, we've been around doing for the past couple of 50 years, creating a common market, abolishing customs duties. This is also something that might actually be relevant for you. But so the EU is, the more the EU is advertising its own feat of integration, the more, of course, there is the interest to learn from this. Also from member states of the customs union and potential sort of aligned countries. I briefly noted here I want to take stock of the institutional framework. Something simply for your information and very briefly and slightly critically, of course. Currently, we are in a very good position to have Erasmus Mundus financing for mobility schemes between a large number of universities of the Southern Caucasus and European universities. That's the Alrakis program, where quite substantial funds are flowing into the financing of mobilities, mostly it's incoming mobilities. And this is, of course, also something I would like to advertise vis-a-vis the colleagues from the Southern Caucasus. Please be aware, I mean, you know, of course, that you are, many of you are a member of these Erasmus Mundus mobility facilities. But for the University of Graz, I would really say we would like to welcome your students and your staff to the greatest extent, and we would be very happy. Not all universities try to have a profile and an interest in the region, but we certainly do. So while mostly what I hear from other Erasmus Mundus programs, the money cannot be spent because there's simply a lack of interested persons, this should not be the case with the Southern Caucasus. So please enjoy this. Let's see that we can use this money. That's the Alrakis Erasmus Mundus. Tempus is, of course, one line of financing. Simply just to name it, the University of Graz is currently involved in a project that deals with migration, the establishment of migration resource centers, together with World University Services, Professor Benedek. So these Tempus things are, they are up, they're running, they're very good. So that's a very potent way of enhancing cooperation. Another thing that we've also mentioned is the current seventh framework program, which has a particular relevance to our topic. The EU is trying to obtain from the academic community insights into the critical challenges that it faces. And at the last call last year, we were all expecting to have a call on the Southern Caucasus come out. But the EU decided to cancel it at the last minute because the Arab Spring was deemed to be so important that there was no announcement for the Southern Caucasus. This year around, it's different. We currently have a call for security and democracy in the Southern Caucasus. It's something where no currently all over Europe and also in third states, 5 to 6 consortia are battling over this. It's a very demanding and tricky call because democracy and security they're interconnected in so many ways. And if the EU wants to have, it is not only looking at the Southern Caucasus, but also looking at the Northern Caucasus, which is territory of the Russian Federation, and the security threats, the inter-ethnic threats, the religious, everything comes together. So currently all over Europe we have many leading academic institutions thinking of how to implement this call, because FP7 programs are comparatively well financed. I think approximately 1.3 million euros are to be spent. So here we see the EU finally, I should say, addressing a future challenge, putting money behind it, so that, you know, in times where universities are starved for finances, budgets uncertain, that's a good thing to know that what we do is actually something that feeds into also the political process. Today we've also had the chance to speak with colleagues and friends from Batumi State University, from Yerevan State University. For us, the first step towards implementing cooperation is the agreement of memoranda of understanding. That's what is usually the first step. For the institution that I represent, I can say that Now, let me be frank with you. I mean, this is an interesting thing, because establishing cooperation with partners in the Southern Caucasus needs to be ceremonial. So excuse me for saying this. But while our international office is usually seeing this as a sort of, is there a substance? Is there anything working? Do you have a cooperation? Do you have a record of cooperation? And once you have it, then let's conclude an agreement. For us, also anticipating the needs from the region, it's the other way around. We want to have a basis first, and then we want to fill it with contents. So we've been discussing this and bringing this also to a common understanding. So that's very good. But so as in diplomacy, as in many other strands of life, you have different expectations, and you somehow have to bring them together. What I find missing in Austria, I have to say, as a German, I'm sorry, we don't have something as the DAAD in Germany, sort of a national funding institution for educational programs. We have an ÖAD, which sounds fairly similar, but it is much less active. I mean, from having worked in Germany for 10 years in establishing educational projects with Russia, there is a clear policy of establishing and supporting educational cooperation with foreign universities, and money is poured into it systematically. We don't have this level of commitment here from the federal government. If we speak with the BMWF, we mostly hear, sorry, funds have ended, there is no support. And so here in Austria, there's also a lack of a sponsoring tradition, I would say. I mean, this is certainly well known. But to give you an example, we've just realized a women's conference on Central Asia, sort of analyzing challenges in the role of women in Central Asia, financed by the German Friedrich Ebert Foundation, which was really a little bizarre, because we had a German foundation working in Central Asia in Almaty come to Graz to help us in realizing this event. And I wish we'd have these kind of independent players in cooperation that we don't have. And so that's certainly a little bit part of everyone's work here. When we do projects, when we want to go somewhere, we don't have this sort of organized backing. We have to pick the support where we get it. One difficulty for us is understanding the university framework. I'm not sure to what extent this is also coincides with your experience, but very often we see that there are sort of government-oriented institutions and opposition-oriented institutions. I've had the experience in Georgia before the elections that if you want to establish cooperation in European law, European studies, you had the choice to go with one state university, which was pro-Saakashvili, and you had another state university that was opposition or contra Saakashvili, or a little, let's say, critical. So for us, seeking cooperation, it was a little difficult, because there are very few people, and if you speak with them, you actually say, okay, whatever I do here is probably going wrong, because if I work with the one side, the other won't like it. That's something that takes a lot of intimate knowledge in establishing who your partners are. Another problem. That's this rivalry type of thing. Now let me skip this for reasons of time. Let me now, I've been sort of, you encounter all sorts of interesting things, and if you want to have a corporation, a university corporation, in EU law, you have different interests, and also country by country. I think we've noticed this morning, the idea of European integration creates different amounts of enthusiasm. Never hostility, but simply the scope of topics is slightly different. Whereas, for instance, I could say with Georgia, we could really discuss legal issues in the technical meaning of the common market. This would be fairly distant for Armenia or Azerbaijan. Mostly there, it's the security dimension, hard security, soft security, the European external policy. So for universities, as I think also for politicians and for the EU, of course, you have to find your way around in this rather complicated and fragmented territory. The institution that was created at the University of Graz, the Russian East European and Eurasian Studies Center, that our host mentioned, is the attempt to kind of open up a new window towards the region. You all know that the University of Graz has been spending many, many years in helping, researching, working with the countries of the Western Balkans. And there is an enormous amount of experience here. And the interesting question that we wanted to study was, can we actually take this experience and can we somehow make it useful for the Southern Caucasus? I mean, still seeing that there are different agendas and all of that. So when Rees started, and I am saying this here with deep satisfaction also, the government of Styria supported us and said, well, this is actually interesting because, of course, universities do what they do, but if you actually say, now you're committed to taking the experience which you gained from Southeastern Europe and try to make this useful for the political and legal processes in the Southern Caucasus, then this is really something we want to support. And this happened, and it's a project that helped us a lot. And I think since time is nearly over, I would also like to explain why we chose this official title for the topic. Because there can, of course, be endless fields and disciplines for academic research. In this kind of project, we analyzed the lessons from European integration. And one lesson is, of course, introducing, and this is just an example, state aid legislation is at the core of the European common market. Competition law and state aid is central. Now, if you want to do this in an economic system where the state giving money to companies, to plants, was sort of the lifeblood of the economy, you see this is the most tremendous turnaround that you could imagine. So we tried with this project to see how the introduction of state aid legislation and the implementation, which is a much more challenging task, how it worked in Southeastern Europe, and to take this knowledge and bring it to the countries concerned. And in the course of this project that was financed by the government of Styria, we had representatives from Moldova, from Georgia, and from other countries who devoted themselves. We have brand new laws in this field. We have no experience. We have courts with judges who have no idea what state aid legislation is. And so if you take the entire body of knowledge that the European Union has developed over the decades, you would say this is the most, one of the most crucial aspects for transforming an economic system. And if we speak about the agenda of Styrian companies going abroad and investing, of course, you'd rather be investing your money in a country where you have the confidence that state-sponsored champions will not push you from the market, where you have a process where state aid is seen as something bad, so that as a private investor, you say you have the confidence, the feeling, yes, this is actually a worthy place for investment. And with this project and with doing this academic analysis, we also want to take this message to the countries concerned and tell them, don't be afraid of state aid legislation. Yes, I know it means that you have to break with many habits. And yes, you are politicians and you have your clientele and you have your political survival to tackle. But it's an immense boost for Western European investors if there is a process leading towards a level playing field. Nothing to be done within a couple of years. So the relevance of what we do and how we'd like to do is to say, okay, this is actually this type of future challenge that we see. We have some young PhD students who are able to digest all the European experience, digest the Southeast European experience, and bring this to their countries, disseminate it. And so we're currently in the process of publishing this, it shows a little bit the kind of approach that we've chosen to take. So much for explanation. I think I'll say thank you all very much. Please, I apologize for not being able to stay here on the podium if you have questions, but I think I'd be always happy to answer questions if you send me emails. So thanks again very much.
Ja, vielen Dank. Sie müssen uns leider verlassen. Ihre Tochter wartet auf Sie, haben Sie mir gesagt. Das kann ich verstehen. Bin seit wenigen Wochen auch Vater einer Tochter. Also liebe Grüße an die Tochter. Danke, dass Sie jetzt noch Zeit gehabt haben, obwohl Sie eigentlich am Vormittag dran gewesen wären, zu uns zu sprechen. Danke für die Ausführungen.